KKRN thanks the local pages for their generous support of community radio.
Welcome to our show, Examine Life, on KKRN in Bella Vista at Round Mountain, 88.5 FM.
I'm Steve.
And I'm Pat.
Plato said that the unexamined life is not worth living. So tonight, and on every first and third Monday, we're going to examine different aspects of human behavior, human actions, and human nature from a perspective of human nature.
Tonight we're going to talk about narcissism and ego and how it's affecting society and how we're contributing that each individually.
I'm sure those of you out there have probably seen a lot of what you might consider to be narcissistic behavior. I know that I have. And sometimes I think we all know that we exhibit it ourselves.
It's a trait we all carry, and it's not all bad. Some of these things contribute to the benefit of society as well as our own individual lives.
Now for the toughest question of the night. What is narcissism?
Well, the definition is extreme interest in your own life and problems that prevents you from caring about others. It's also defined as an exceptional interest in and admiration for yourself or love of oneself and one's body as exhibited in excessive selfishness.
And of course, narcissism, the word, came from Narcissus, who was a hunter in ancient Greece. And a myth is that he through a complex maneuver, ended up at a pond or a lake, and he saw himself in the reflection and found himself to be so beautiful that he couldn't take his eyes off of it. And he ended up killing himself because he realized it was only a reflection and he couldn't have it.
And there's a fine line between healthy and unhealthy narcissism or ego. It's usually centered around vanity and appearance, which makes it good when we go out into society. We do take care of ourselves daily in how we appear in public.
So it's a matter of degree. If you excessively care only about your appearance, unless, I suppose, you're on a stage show or something where appearance matters a great deal.
Yes, and the benefits of being a little egotistical or narcissistic is it gives you drive and ambition. It makes you think that somehow I'm unique and I have something to offer the world that's unique, and this often drives businesses.
And I think if you're a physician or sometimes the owner of a company, you have to be a prime decision maker, and you can't be doubting yourself all the time. And I think it helps you develop as a leader, and sometimes it can help you become excessively demanding, and you become narcissistic.
There's a few questions you can ask yourself on the flip side of the benefits of being narcissistic is ask these questions of yourself. Is this maybe harming you? And one of those questions is it all about me?
And another question is, do I really listen and have empathy with that person that's talking to me?
And do rules apply to me?
And can I take criticism?
Or is it always their fault? They don't understand me. If you have that perspective about yourself, chances are you lean to narcissism.
Or if you say rules don't apply to me.
Exactly. The egocentric portion of our ego is what we're referring to as narcissism. We're not talking about the clinical diagnosis of 1% of the population. That's totally different than what we're talking about, how society is becoming more narcissistic.
And when does it become harmful?
I think when it interferes with your life and your ability to interact with other people.
Or perhaps with other people's lives?
Yes. Think about someone whose vanity is all about themselves and how they look, and they'll outshine everybody else to the detriment of everyone else sometimes.
But I think if a person's narcissistic, it's probably impossible to fix that, because if you are narcissistic, then any of the problems you're going through are not your fault. So by definition, there's nothing to fix.
And usually, you know, as children is where we start to outgrow this in the family. We have that survival, and as babies, we are the center of the family, and that's a good thing. They need to be provided for. But as you interact in the family, as you grow older, the family brings that down on you. You're not the only one in the family.
And I think with a baby, the reason they're not narcissistic is because with a baby, it's basically just reacting to their biological imperative. They don't yet have an ego. They don't have an identity. So there's no one there to be narcissistic.
This is true. And the self-centeredness of an individual is detrimental usually to their spouse, their marriage, their family. That's one of the reasons we have such a high divorce rate is everybody wants it their way.
And there's at some point in every child's development when they need to start being trained to be a human, and they have to start knowing right from wrong and knowing what they can do and what they can't. And today, and probably for quite some time now, a lot of parents don't seem to want to make their kids angry or make their kids not like them. So it's yes to everything. It's you're a wonderful kid no matter what you do. And there's no shaming, and there's just no sense of humility at all. And everyone should have some humility.
And the helicopter parents is doing harm to that child and not allowing them to feel they are not the center of attention, that every achievement does not have to be recognized that you do. Those children need to have those failures and that criticism from others.
Absolutely. There have been kids probably throughout history that have had horrible childhoods, have been beaten down and came back for more. And I think those kind of things make you stronger.
Some of the things that mom and dad should have taught you, other than the golden rule of do unto others as you wish done unto you, but things, simple things like manners in society. You can't just do what you want whenever you want as a child.
And my rights end where your rights begin.
And the respect for others. We don't have a lot of respect for other people's property. You find this when people squat on vacant properties. You find this when people steal other people's property, cars, whatever. That's a lack of respect for others as well as their property.
And you see a lot of those kind of behaviors in pack behavior, which, in my opinion, you can call it a gang. Political parties are packs, as far as I'm concerned. You get a group of two or three bad people together, and they're going to do things that they may not have the courage to do alone. And they're also going to justify their behavior because the other members of the pack are acting the same way.
You should pick your company wisely, because your conduct will be geared to that company. You get a bunch of boys in a locker room or men in a locker room, and they're going to say things that they would not say if mom was sitting there.
And winning versus playing your best game. One of my things that I like to do is paintball, and I've noticed that some of the players, you know, they just have these super automatic weapons, and they just spray you with paint, basically. But I consider it to be a much bigger victory if I can take them out with one shot while they're trying to spray me with all this paint. And so that's playing my best game.
And children are not necessarily taught do your best on that soccer field or baseball field. It's all about the winning, and they lose sight of the process and the camaraderie that a team sport is supposed to instill.
And no means no, which is not something I think a lot of kids learn today. And it's resulted in just outrageous behavior in some cases. And I think you see a lot of adults that tell you it's been going on for a long time.
And it's not just sex, no means no. It means, no, we're not going to bargain with, I don't have to do my homework tonight because I'm going to do something else tomorrow. It no means no about everything in life. And once you accept that as the end of your conduct, then you're a much wiser kid.
And probably the reason it's becoming a little more prevalent today is because there's no societal karma. You can act any way you want, and you'll find some large group of people to justify it.
as parents, normally you would correct your children in public. You would not let them scream and holler in a restaurant. And today you see that everywhere. And most of us do not want to get up and criticize that child or that parent. Heaven help you, if you touch someone else's child, you're going to get arrested. But there's a fine line between mentioning to someone, maybe you should take that baby outside and let him scream out there.
Yeah, there is a fine line. You see a lot of disparaging looks. You see people just letting their kids go crazy. And some of it is laziness, but some of it's because they've read a book that says it's good for their ego to be allowed to go crazy. And I can't tell you how frustrating it was for me as a parent when my kids were acting out to stop whatever we were doing and do something about the situation, even if it had to end the night. And I know some people will say that that gives you the power, gives the child the impression that they have power over you, but what happened when I got home prevented any of that thinking from happening.
And that's part of the problem with our unruly schools. Teachers cannot effectively teach when you have students that are acting out and there's no discipline at home, and they have this self-centered attitude that they can do what they want, where they want, however they want.
And for those of you that think this strategy sounds a little rough or tough love or a little mean, I can tell you that I have wonderful relationships with my three girls, and they had strict rules.
If you don't have any rules, when that child becomes a teenager, he becomes unruly. As he becomes an adult, he has a lack of patience with others. This can lead to road rage, can use to abuse of elderly people as well as handicapped people. They have no respect if you don't instill that in them as a parent.
And I don't understand the in the current days, the lack of respect for elderly. I can understand if an older person is acting like a jerk, but people just tend to have a lack of respect for anyone. And for handicapped, for those that are poor, they like to politically say that they're for all of that, but how they act personally when I see them on the street doesn't seem to be that way in many cases.
And children, above all, need to understand that they have to have a certain amount of respect for everyone else, be it handicapped or be it elderly, and make allowances for those that cannot conduct themselves as easily and efficiently as that fully skilled child.
Yeah, I think in general it does go back to the family and how those kids are raised, but this has been going on for a long time. And again, if you feel that all of the problems, that none of the problems are related to your actions or your behaviors, then how can it be corrected?
And if we get onto the subject of ego, which is narcissism is nothing more than egocentric behavior, but the ego is also what children need to understand, and that they are in control of their own.
You're listening to Examine Life on KKRN, 88.5 FM on your dial in Bella Vista and Round Mountain. We're going to take a little break and we'll be right back. Thank you.
This is Examine Life on KKRN in Bella Vista in Round Mountain at 88.5 FM.
Tonight we're talking about narcissism. Let's talk about ego for a little bit. The definition for ego, it depends on what you're talking about. It's a matter of degree in many cases. Ego can be the opinion you have about yourself.
The ego in Latin is the word I.
And so it can also, many people when they say you have an ego, they mean that you have an inflated ego, which means that you have a much higher opinion of yourself than what you probably are.
It's also our conscious mind of who we are in the world and how we fit in is I.
And it's actually probably the main sin in something like Buddhism, where you try to avoid having an ego in, as a spiritual goal.
Ego is something we all need and definitely use it to our benefit, or we think we're using it to our benefit in most times, but it can be detrimental.
It can be. It's also a very positive thing. Without any ego at all, there would be no I to make the decisions, to do the things for other people. You have to have an ego, but as with everything else in life, it's simply a matter of degree. At what point is it inflated?
Well, if you have an inflated feeling of pride in your superiority over others, then you're not as easily listening to what others have to say as you think your opinion's more important.
But sometimes that could be, you know, a momentary thing. A boxer wins a match. Maybe he happens to be a really humble guy. I've known a couple of semi-professional fighters that were pretty humble when they weren't in a ring, but at that moment of triumph, they just had to holler out, I am the best.
And that's a good thing. That motivates them, and it also keeps them in the game. Oftentimes, we have a tendency to criticize ego, particularly in the male image, because it can easily get oversized, you might say. But women are guilty of having egos, too. It can be power. It can be control over others that we seek. And our ego allows us to do that.
And I think they're probably expressed differently. I know a very strong female who may say things like, instead of saying, we're going to do it my way, she would say, we want to do it this way, don't we?
Yes, and that's a subtle way of using your ego. But using the word we in conversation usually means us, that we're going to cooperate in an effort to do this.
Whether you like it or not.
It's true. My way or the highway is the opposite of that.
And by the way, it wasn't Pat that I was talking about.
Besides, he wouldn't bring it up if it was. But ego, one of the things about ego is we don't know what we don't know. And oftentimes, we're not listening because we think we know it all. And that leads to problems that we've actually created ourselves by not getting an education or listening to what someone's trying to caution us about, and we just go headstrong in.
And that's an interesting concept. I actually come from a family that would talk over each other. And my analysis of it was that we weren't listening. We were thinking about what we wanted to say, and so we weren't really hearing what they were saying, and we're talking over each other. And I've tried in my adult life to train myself not to do that, but I've done it for so long that my family that I have now, when I'm silent and listening, they think something's wrong.
And again, that comes from training. Your child, you know, when everyone in the family is talking and no one's listening, then they just each start talking louder. And it's a training issue. You tell that child, just a moment, so-and-so's speaking. I can only listen to one person at a time, so I'm listening to Tim instead of you. But your time will come. I'll get to you in just a minute.
And thereby prevent a little narcissist from blooming.
Yes, hopefully. Or ego getting out of control.
Which are probably both part of the same thing. I think when your ego becomes large enough, that's how you become a narcissist.
But ego is beneficial in a lot of ways. We talked about, you and I, in ego, in corporations, how that is often the case the way people get advanced. And a lot of people call that the politics of a corporation, but it is usually a competition of egos.
Absolutely. You have to have an ego if you're going to make your way in the world. But I knew a cardiovascular surgeon in Southern California who was, in my opinion, the very best cardiovascular surgeon. If you needed surgery, he was the one you wanted, but he could care less whether you survived or not. What made him such a good surgeon, besides his probably brain power, was that he hated to lose. He hated the idea of him losing a patient, but he really did not care whether the patient lived or died. He just didn't like to lose.
Is that ego, or is that focus, or what would you really define that as?
Well, the way he treated the nurses in the facility, he didn't treat his patients that way because they were customers, told me that he really didn't care about people.
And that goes back to having respect for others and allowing them to speak and not just the power play over another individual.
And yet, the point I was getting at is that it made him a successful surgeon. Simply the fact that he did not like to lose, not caring about people, didn't seem to matter or factor in the equation at all. But he didn't like to lose, and so he was therefore an excellent surgeon.
So that could be a blend of narcissism in his lack of compassion and empathy for others, but his ego allowed him to focus and excel in a professional side of his life.
Right. Or I could say that his ego caused him to be that way, and his ego also, a side effect was that, was he was an excellent surgeon.
It could be. It could be that education process, that's how he was trained. I've been told that surgeons are the type of individual that are high-strung, type A personalities that really are not touchy-feely, so they don't really want to talk to the patient.
And they have to make a lot of quick decisions on the spot. And you need an ego for that because you have to have a lot of confidence in yourself to make decisions like that. They're life and death, a momentary lapse, and you can kill someone.
And that comes back to a CEO of a corporation where he's required to make decisions all day, every day, that may or may not affect the corporation as a whole, but definitely one or two people's lives within that company as an employee, possibly.
And a lot of other entities throughout the business world, the larger the corporation, the more effect it has on more people. And his simple decisions made in anger or made in thoughtful reflection can have an effect on a wide scale.
I've been in corporate America, and in middle management, oftentimes the struggle between egos is detrimental to the corporation because of the backbiting, the infighting, and I think that goes back to the culture of corporate America is based on egos.
And it's kind of funny, in my personal experience, I was a very small manager of a local branch. But we were very, very successful and were kind of famous in the country nationally within our company because we had such growth in such a small area. And the way that I did it was by constantly going against everything my bosses told me to do. It was successful, so I retained my job. But my ego wanted me. I was proud of the fact that I wasn't doing anything the way my bosses wanted me to do it. And that was sheer ego and probably a little bit of narcissism, but it worked.
Well, pride can lead to arrogance and hubris. We've seen this many times on television with athletes or people that are in trouble that would normal people would consider unacceptable conduct, and yet their arrogance makes it sound like they have this sense of entitlement that they should be able to do this regardless of what society thinks.
That's right. And that the larger it grows, it goes back to that point that we made earlier about believing that your decision or your importance is the only one that matters. And you get to the point where you're blind. I've seen married couples where one or the other is so dominant, and the other one listens to them and just does everything they tell them and never argues back. And pretty soon, the dominant one starts to say some pretty ridiculous things because they don't have anyone moderating their opinions, and they start to believe whatever comes out of their mind.
And that's a sense of overconfidence and ego. It also goes back to they're the only ones that know the best thing for someone else. You sometimes see this in academia, that it's an elitist attitude, but some of that is ego.
Absolutely. Ego and narcissism, I think, are interchangeable in a lot of ways. I think ego causes narcissism in some cases, and it's a result of narcissism in others. But ego is a fundamental thing that every human has, and to some degree, I'm sure every animal has it as well, and probably the decision on plants is still in question.
And go back to the I in society, you have to ask yourself, am I part of the problem or part of the solution? And if you are part of the problem, then you need to take a serious look at your conduct. Is it based on ego and that you don't want to accept failure or you don't want to accept criticism? It's hard to accept criticism even if you don't have a big ego.
So we're going to take another break. This is the show Examine Life on KKRN, and we'll be back in with you in just a couple of minutes. Join Shane, Local Motion, on Fridays at noon for a taste of music by local talent.
Like to peek behind the curtain? Join Doug Bennett on Saturday mornings at 9 a.m. for Unspun, Experiment in Truth Telling.
For your listening enjoyment of obscure and independent music, tune in on Tuesdays at 9 a.m. to hear Don Fennell's Lost and Found. Currently, you're listening to Examine Life with Pat and Steve on KKRN 88.5, Bella Vista in Round Mountain. Thank you. Welcome back to Examine Life on KKRN 88.5. We're discussing narcissism today, and we were discussing ego before our last break.
Let's talk about how egos play into government. The power, money, influence.
Yeah, government and business, two sides of the same coin. Both are looking for power, influence, and money. And they're doing it all to feed their egos. And it's reflected, how big their egos are reflected in how big and brash their scandals are.
And that's another idea of hubris, arrogance. They all have it. Any government official you hear talking, it's all about them and what they're doing for the constituents back home, when in fact it's about the lobbyists that are paying them to accomplish something.
Yes, I hear so much people talking about how business is evil and government is good, and I hear the other side talking about government is evil and business is good. And in fact, if you separated the two, I think we could have a wonderful representative government here. But there's too much collusion between the two, and it's all to feed everyone's ego. The government administrator, even who's not a politician, he uses his influence to feed his ego. I can do this for you if you do this for me. The elected official is the same way. The businessman goes to him because he wants his business to be the best and not have as much competition, so he gets rules changed to make himself happy. But he's no worse than the government official that's being bribed or influenced.
And power has a tendency to corrupt, as does influence. And you combine the two in Washington, and you get very little accomplished except the power struggles and the influence of throwing money around.
Yeah. You know, the scandals, again, just shows what kind of egos you're dealing with. And, you know, some of the selfies that have recently happened in politics are probably more fantastic than what you can see on elsewhere on the internet.
The conduct of politicians should be held to a higher standard than the rest of us, but it doesn't seem to happen that way.
That's one of the biggest complaints that people have is, you know, for the Health Care Act, why don't they have to live with it? And, you know, why do they make these rules and regulations affecting us but not affecting themselves?
Goes back to ego. I'm better than that. I have a sense of entitlement of something better than what the average is because I'm better than average.
And, you know, I our show focuses on human nature, or I try to focus there when I can. And I don't think these people are evil, these politicians and these businessmen. You know, we come from an animal nature where the job of some, the biological imperative of some males is to gather all the food and females to themselves that they can and all the power. And I think they're just being their natural self. It doesn't mean that it's good for society as we have society today, but I think that's where they're coming from.
But you cannot justify 3,000 years of evolution of the caveman being able to hit someone over the head with a club to what's happening in society today with power and influence, not being a club, but can be money or position. You have to negate that biological process at some point in time.
No, I don't justify it. As a matter of fact, that's our subject tonight is narcissism, and part of it has to do with you being blind to your own flaws. We're human beings. We can look at ourselves and say, we're being this way, but we're not animals, so I'm not going to be this way. But these people don't see their flaws, and that's where the issue is. It's not a justification. It's an explanation of behavior. Every behavior has an explanation, but it's not always justified.
I see oftentimes your politicians starting out their careers, and they have such good intentions, and you wonder after 5 years in Congress or Assembly or, you know, the legislature of some sort, they take on the colors of those that they criticized before they got there.
Don't even get me started. And to hear some of the things that they say and the proposals they make, and you know, to hear when they were coming out with the Health Care Act, to say on television in front of millions of people We have to pass it to see what's in it. Now, whether you're liberal or conservative, whoever you are, that's someone who is only listening to themselves and has no idea how other people are hearing them.
And is that not the power of influence?
Oh, yeah, being in power all this time. I'm a firm believer in term limits. We'll never have them because the people that would be subject to them have to vote for them. But the longer they're up there, the more they listen to their egos, the more they get things done the way they want them to be done, and the less they're able to hear anyone but themselves.
The other thing I see happening is you get these committees, and who's ever the chairman of that committee wields a lot of power and a lot of influence. And part of the problem not getting anything done in Washington is they have too much concentrated power with these chairmen of these committees, and bills never even get out of committee.
I do believe that's totally true. A new politician coming into town is going to be invisible unless they can get some bills passed or make some changes or do something that gets them recognized. And I'm sure there's a lot of the elbowing that goes on that says, well, if you don't vote for this, I don't see any reason why we should support anything that you do. And so you either become part of the pack or you're there silently for 4 years, you get nothing done, and you don't get elected again because of the subject of another program, the way people vote and why.
Again, I go back to the power of influence, and is this not how the good old boy network was originally contrived?
In a lot of different ways. Politics is just one side of it. It happens in business. It happens in probably many facets of the community. People, I think, again, it's another biological imperative to join a group of other people. I think we're social animals, and we join groups, whether that be gangs or churches or coffee clutches. People band together. It's the purpose of the banding and the actions that they take that makes it a behavior that's positive or negative for society.
But does it always have to be self-serving?
No. If it's for society, it's not self-serving. Although there is something to be said for the concept that even people who are very, very charitable may be doing it just to make themselves feel really good about themselves.
Well, I think charity is something that's a little bit different, as is volunteer work. When you are not getting recognized or paid for what you do, then that is a true, in my opinion, a charitable action.
But usually if you're in a group, you are getting appreciated for what you do. Simple little things you can do, take some food down to your local charity. And if they ask you if you want a tax form to fill out, tell them no. Tell them you don't want anyone to know your name. Make it anonymous. That's a true gift. Anything else is just feeding your ego.
That's right. And I think that's where we lose sight of our individual conduct in society. If we make that one little change to ourselves and we get someone else to make that same change, you remind that friend or sibling or child of yours saying, you know, it's not about you. It's about helping someone else. It's about accomplishing something for someone else.
You can do that. You have to somehow get through that's a positive thing. If you're kind of conditioned to get what you want, it's very difficult for you to have a paradigm shift in your view that doing something for someone else is actually beneficial to you. There's proof throughout history that it is, but I think it's going to be hard to convince people. I think the turnaround is going to be difficult, and all the electronics and everything that we deal with today, while I don't think they're a bad thing, they will make that process even more difficult.
The evolution of society has brought us to this point of narcissism and me first, and I'm going to do what I want and what's best for me. We see this in voting. We see this in money. We see this in all aspects of life. But society condones it. We allow that child to act unruly in public rather than scorn mom and dad or make a comment. We allow poor behavior on every level.
We do. And the reasons that we do it, I don't think, are going to be easy to change either, because these parents were raised by parents, and now they're raising children. And these children, some of them are raising their children and instilling the same values in them. It's going to be difficult to break that cycle without almost something catastrophic.
But we started it somewhere, be it in the 60s or 70s with the flower children and the society for the benefit of me rather than for the whole society.
I don't think we started it. I think we brought it back, the 20s, when alcohol was illegal. The same kind of behavior existed. You had criminals selling alcohol. You had people going to speakeasies, even though they knew it was illegal. You had the kind of behavior with nightclubs and so on that you have today. I think everything goes in cycles. It happened before there was a United States of America, and it's happened in different parts of the world off and on. And you know, during World War II, we were all being threatened, and all of a sudden everyone thought about everyone else. That's why I think it almost has to be a crisis.
I hate to think that that's the only way we could change society to be more beneficial to each other and not so self-centered. And entertainment is one thing, you know, when you go to a speakeasy or you go to a bar or whatever, that's entertainment. But when you live your life on a day-to-day, everyday basis, is I take myself into consideration on every one of my decisions before I ever consider that other person, my child, my spouse, my family, my extended family, my coworkers. If you're always putting you first, all of that suffers.
Well, the beginning of what you said, I hate to think it as well. It's just what I believe it's going to take. Again, in the 20s, we had that same form of narcissism and ego gratification. Then we had the 30s with the Depression. Then we had the war come up, and all of a sudden, you know, people became more altruistic and more concerned about their group. And since then, we haven't had anything that's really threatened us, except for the 9/11 attack, in which case, what did we do? For a very short time, we kind of all banded together again. It's sad that I think that, but I really think when you reach a certain degree of excess, it takes something major to change it.
The really sad part about that is the patriotism that was instilled by 9/11 didn't even last 5 years.
No.
When everyone started right back on the same old, you know, business as usual, and the same, you know, step on Joe to get to what you need because it's more important you get it than he does.
I think it's because we have this idea that we're invincible as a nation, and that's just not true. The Romans thought that they were invincible. I'm sure many governments and peoples have thought they were. And so there was a little bit of fright in the beginning because of what happened, but that we recovered quickly because there was never any danger to us outside of what happened to all those people. People in the rest of America went right back to their old behaviors because they felt safe.
Is society does not have a chance to get that team spirit back, so to speak, where we pull together for a common cause that lasts more than 3 weeks or 3 months?
Well, I think we do have a chance, and people are with common causes all the time. You can look on some of the man in the street interviews, and you'll see people asking if they care about the government and they care about politics, and they say yes, and then they show them a picture of Joe Biden and ask who he is, and they don't know.
I think I recently heard someone say that we're in a time where more people in society are electing to be ignorant. They choose not to learn. They choose not to study or to listen to what's going on around them. They're in a little tunnel, isolated, focused on their own life.
Right. That goes back to the narcissism. They're focused on what pleases them the most, what they've kind of been raised to be pleased by. An interesting takeaway from the narcissistic point, though, is that they tend to follow fads, what their friends are interested in or what they're interested in. So I don't know if that's ego or not. The gratification is to only do that which they seem to enjoy at the moment. But they're really doing what their friends are doing. So I'm sure that's a different dynamic.
Is it not an ego gratification to have 1,100 friends on your Facebook page?
Well, yeah, that's not the friendship that I'm talking about. But sure, I mean, it's you've seen comedy routines about people gathering as many quote-unquote friends as they can, which aren't really friends. And I think that's where things break down is there's no meaning to any of it. There's, in a pinch, they wouldn't be your friends, and there's no depth. And that's why adversity seems to bring out the best in people. A war is a terrible thing, but it brings out these wonderful qualities in people. And adversity does the same thing in all of its forms, and I just think we need some more adversity.
Life seems challenging enough to add any more great adversity, but I can see what you're talking about when you think of the labels that we put on success or accomplishment. If we have X number of followers on Twitter, or we're somehow interconnected with 14 people on a phone call that is all texting, that is something that is to be attained. Yet it is meaningless to those people in the long run.
And with that, I think we'll take another break. This is Examine Life. You're listening to on KKRN FM 88.5, Bella Vista and Round Mountain. Join Shane, Local Motion, on Fridays at noon for a taste of music by local talent.
Like to peek behind the curtain? Join Doug Bennett on Saturday mornings at 9 a.m. for Unspun, Experiment in Truth Telling.
For your listening enjoyment of obscure and independent music, tune in on Tuesdays at 9 a.m. to hear Don Fennell's Lost and Found. Currently, you're listening to Examine Life with Pat and Steve on KKRN 88.5, Bella Vista in Round Mountain.
You're listening to Examine Life on KKRN in Bella Vista at Round Mountain at 88.5 FM. This evening we're talking about ego and narcissism. We're going to take it to the world stage here.
And you wanted to talk about Vladimir Putin.
Yes, I think this is a timely time in history where egos are on the world stage, because we have instant 724 news and they can steal the spotlight at any second. And Putin is a prime example of that.
Now, I'm sure that you feel the same way as I do. I don't like what Vladimir Putin is doing. The question is it successful for him to do what he's doing? He seems to be happy both with his actions and with our responses.
Well, that's the irony. We don't have an ego on the other side. There's no one in the European Union. There's no one wants to come forth on the world stage and challenge him. His ego is running wild. And the more he sees that his, you know, astonishing actions bring him more attention, the more he does it.
So we need to have another ego of equal intensity to offset him.
It sounds ironic, but in the world stage, Hitler did this for years before someone would come up and say, okay, we need to put a stop to this. And unfortunately, history is kind of repeating itself, and the irony is it's even in the same region of Europe.
It's kind of a history repeating itself, a slightly different form, I guess. But he's doing it in a different way also. And you're right, it is all ego, and we need to have a balancing ego. And that's what I find fascinating is it's just like with the Cold War and the mutual assured destruction. A lot of people thought it was politically crazy to do that, but you know what? We didn't have a nuclear war.
And Gorbachev and Reagan were equal egos, you might say. Their confrontations were public on the world stage, but there wasn't 724 news like there is today.
So that may be a little bit different, but as you can see, it doesn't change things. We still have a giant ego out there that wants to take over as much as he can. And what's required? An equal ego. And the United States in World War II collectively had an ego. You saw it in their music. You saw it in the way that people acted, in the books that they wrote. You got to have an ego to balance the ego. That part hasn't changed at all.
And I think what you're going to see happen in the European Union is the countries that are, in fact, part of the European Union, they're going to wait till one of them becomes attacked before they take action. Ukraine wasn't a part of the European Union yet.
Well, but, you know, before World War II, the places that Hitler took over were. And there wasn't a union, but there was a Europe. And they didn't do anything. And actually, none of them did anything until it was too late. Europe was essentially belonged to Hitler by the time we got involved. The only country that really didn't of any size or power was Britain.
And it was a joint effort between us and them to, you know, take back Europe. And I find it ironic now that England has pretty much said, or Britain has pretty much said, we don't want to get involved. We don't want to be the first ones out there. Someone else step up, and then we'll consider something maybe.
Well, they have power considerations. You know, their energy supply comes from Russia, a lot of Europe. So that's a powerful thing to fight against. If I think that's mostly what they're afraid of. That's what I'm hearing, at least, with what everyone's talking about.
And Putin laid that groundwork over the last decade or so when he took over Georgia. It was the natural gas lines and the control of energy that he was looking to then. Now the Ukraine, a lot of those pipelines go through Ukraine to the EU, and he's again grabbing that same power.
And that's actually the same reason that Hitler invaded Russia in the way that he did. Had he headed towards Moscow, he probably would have had much more success in Russia, but he was headed for the oil fields, and he didn't have a chance of winning those battles.
And again, Russia is taking the port sides of the Ukraine. They want that water access, and we keep allowing them to do that one by one, and this is going to repeat World War II inevitably. I don't see how it can go another way that's solvable amicably.
Well, World War II won't happen unless we come up with a big enough ego to start it. You brought up the fact that it's a lot like World War II, and the situation has changed because of the news cycle. But I don't think the news cycle has that much effect on politics. It has more of an effect on how we feel about it and what people are willing to do. And again, unless the crisis come home to roost, I don't think we have our heart in doing anything to stop him as a nation.
And we definitely do not need another Pearl Harbor where it was brought home to our doorstep.
No, we do not. But I don't see how we can avoid it.
Okay. You have been listening to Examine Life. And we are on the first and third Mondays of each month.
We're new at this, so I hope you'll be patient with us. We're learning how to do this whole radio thing. We hope that at some point we can become entertaining and informative.
And this evening we have talked about ego and narcissism. Our next subject, we haven't quite decided what it's going to be yet, but hopefully it'll be as intriguing.